The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio. Keep your mission on your mind, and your mind on your mission. This is Mission Minded with Michael Coleman.
Welcome back to Mission Minded. Keep your mind on your mission on your mind. Let's start right there. Michael Coleman, the CEO of the Heart of Alabama Food Bank. They cover 35 wonderful counties here in the great state of Alabama, and they work with Feeding America. When I say keep your mind on your mission on your mind, what do you think of?
Personally, I think things that we talked about along the way is about to maximize your purpose. And you have to do it with great intentionality. And so when you talk about keeping your, you know, understand what your purpose is, whether it's in your business, personal life, whatever it is, and that success and the things that we're talking about don't happen by accident. You're not going to just typically stumble into success. It has to be done with great intentionality, which means you have to stay focused and you have to continue to strive to get better. No matter the ages of your limit, the limits of your ages or your experience or anything else. I had a little verbal dyslexia.
There you go. You know, I think of mission statements, because we talk a lot about mission statements. I know when you sit there and say mission statements, people are like, oh, and I know people, it's just boring. Yeah. It's exactly what we do to a T. It's got to be fit in a little paragraph. But I find myself, it's interesting as a business owner, because I actually had to do this as a business owner. I know you have too, and you have to do it. Mm-hmm. You have to sit down there with your crew and say, okay, well, let's write a mission statement. And sometimes when you're getting screwed up, maybe you're going in the wrong direction, maybe things aren't working the way they're supposed to, sometimes it's good to revisit that mission mind or that mission statement and sit down and go, okay, are we doing what we say we do here?
Because
we talked about, you know, changing the mission, but should we change the mission? And is it important to change the mission? Should it be standing there? Because I know a lot of businesses have that mission statement right by the front door. Most times I think it's for the customer, not so much the worker. Maybe it should be the other way around.
Yeah. I mean, it's so easy to have what we call mission creep, especially in the nonprofit world, because there's so much out there to do. And so what you'll find is oftentimes you've set boundaries. Here's my left boundary. Here's my right boundary. I want to move forward. But then this boundary butts up to somebody else's boundary and you start to bleed over. And then before you realize it, you're not as near as focused and intentionally moving forward. You've bled over into this other. And not that the bleeding over or not what you're doing when you bleed over is not good for society or good for the people you're trying to serve, but you have limited resources. You have limited assets, all of this. And if you deviate and step outside of your own boundaries, then you're depleting the resources you have for your stated mission, what you're telling people you're doing and what you're you've told donors, what you've told volunteers, this is what our path is. And it's very easy to find yourself over here outside of those boundaries. And it's a real drain on resources.
Yeah. I want to get into the ins and outs of business neutrality during an election cycle. And of course, we have our elections coming up here and we're in the election year in 2024. And it's funny because I don't ever remember business ever. I know there's a connection there between elections, reds, blues, independents, and businesses, and certainly non-for-profits and how that works from a legal standpoint. But I do want to get your thoughts on how it's playing out, because it seems like you can't do anything in this country anymore without it being political. It just politics just was such a small part of what we used to do. And we didn't share with people who we were voting for. It was a very private thing. It was like our phone numbers. We never gave out our phone numbers. But before we did that, you said something that reminded me of something I wanted to ask you, and I'm so glad you did. So I've got a friend of mine, and this kind of goes, and this is actually a friend of mine, it's not me, who called me the other day, and he saw this commercial for one of these, and it made me think of you, one of these prepared food places, one of these like Blue Apron. You know, there's all these things, these pre-boxed things, right?
Yeah.
And I don't. if you look up pre-box foods right now, there's got to be 35 or 40 different.
It's crazy, right?
Sure. And I mean, just like Uber, you know, Uber started one thing, and now there's 16 different places that will give you a ride somewhere. You know, it's like as soon as someone has a good idea, there's 35 of the same things. And I'm always thinking to myself as a business guy, if you're going into a situation where you're doing something that someone's already doing, and obviously they're doing it quite well because you wouldn't want to get in that line of business.
Right.
What do you tell your investors if you're wanting to come up with money before you start a brick and mortar and say, okay, is this something that's viable in my life or this part of the city, regardless of what, whether it's a pre-boxing of food or whatever, when you know, because like there's like 16 different shaving companies now. There used to be Gillette. And then all of a sudden there was this one that, you know, they did the thing where they mailed you.
These razor clubs for $1.
Now there's Harry's and it's like, and there's like 16 of them. And I'm like, how are they possibly all making money? Do we all really need to shave that much? So if you're, first of all, is that smart? And second of all, if I'm a business and I'm going to a prospective investor and he's asking me, okay, you want to do a prepackaged food business. What's going to be different about your prepackaged food business than the other 25 that are out there right now? Yeah. You obviously want to have something different. And in most cases, I think people say, well, we're just going to do it better.
Yeah.
We're going to have better food. It's going to be fresher food. It's going to be more tasty. Yeah. We're going to have more menu cards. But that's not enough to get a billionaire or Shark Tank to sit down and say, yeah, let me give you $50,000 towards your business. I think that's something I want to get into. What's the thinking there?
So you've hit on one of the two key things, but I would start with saying, and this is really interesting to me when you look at America and as technology goes, then you start developing ideas and markets that you didn't really know were there, or we didn't know how big of a market. Mm-hmm. So we've always had taxi cabs as long as there's been automobiles and people needing ride and giving rides. But if, you know, somebody came in and brought this idea of Uber and Lyft and just as a whole different approach using technology, your phone, you can easily charge, all that kind of stuff. And so the question is, as long as there's space in the marketplace, then there's going to be people who want to come into that marketplace as long as there's still demand. At some point, though, the demand gets saturated. You have more supply than demand and just market forces take over. And then those who are not as good or not as proficient or not as well put together, financially stable, all those kind of things, they start to fall out because they can't compete because they're not necessarily better than the other people. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the advantages of getting in early on a marketplace like this is, you know, Uber's got the name. So it's, forgive me, I don't remember the name, but it's like when you can get your brand to identify the action. So I'll give you a good example. And I remember taking a marketing class many, many, many years ago and this coming up. But we don't say, do you have a tissue? We say, do you have a Kleenex? Mm-hmm. Yep. Well, a Kleenex is the brand.
Yep.
Okay. So if you, and that's kind of how Uber is now. When we say, hey, let's grab an Uber, we're not necessarily talking about Uber company, although lots of times we are, but we just identify as that action now.
That's pretty amazing how fast that happened because when you can use something as the brand itself, you know, we used to, you know, a lot of people say a Coke. When they want to pop, they'll say, can I have a Coke? I don't know if that's a Southern thing or not, but we always ask for a Coke.
It definitely is a Southern. I used to tell people, you know, this was in 83, 84. And look, we still do it today. But we'll drive up in a drive-thru. They'll say, let's go by and get a Coke. And pull up in a drive-thru. And I go, what kind of Coke you want? I want a Dr. Pepper.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Right. So that is really, really impressive that Uber has done that. Okay. So.
So there's got to be enough demand.
Yeah.
But then you go, okay, if there's going to be demand and you're going to compete with these guys over here, there's got to be something that you're offering them that's different. So it needs to either, you could say, well, our service is going to be better. But then you think, okay, how many people don't take Ubers because they say, I would take an Uber, but their service is not reliable. So you can say I'll do it better, but there's really no evidence, at least that I'm aware of, that a company like Uber is suffering market share issues because their model is inefficient or ineffective and all that. I mean, every time I've used it, the people show up, they get you to where you want to go to. The drivers are hit and miss, but so there's really nothing that I see wrong with that particular model. However, that doesn't mean that there's not some niche out there that says, hey, yeah, we're going to be Uber-like, but we're going to market somebody that Uber doesn't target, and whatever that may be. And so it's like an Uber style, but you're bringing something to the market. And then you build your own brand, you build your own, because you can segment a market and say, okay, this particular business overall owns 75% share and everybody else is splitting the 25%. But then you go, but in terms of special needs or whatever kind of stuff, then this company has a significant market share. So those two things to me, if you're looking for investors, if you're just looking to find your spot, and I've talked about this probably ad nauseum in some of our programs in terms of nonprofits, because one of the things I coach when they come to me and say, hey, could you help me think through this nonprofit idea? Absolutely, be glad to. And one of the things they say is, well, I say, well, what's your idea? What gap are you filling in the nonprofit space? What service oriented or what human need is there that's not being met? And they say, well, I'm going to do this. And I think I've used in the past, it's a true story. A woman came to me wanting to start a mentoring program. And I said, there's already 19 mentoring programs around here. Why would I not evaluate those and see which one's best to donate my money towards? Why would I donate to a new unproven mentor program? And so I said, that's a question you're going to get. And if you don't have an answer to that question, you're dead in the water.
What did she say?
She ended up not applying for that, you know, not creating that program. And while my goal was not to discourage people, my goal is to help them face what they're going to face in advance and think through those challenges, where it's going to save them a whole lot of heartache. It's going to save them a whole lot of money, because a lot of people get jump in. They don't ask the right questions. They start a nonprofit. There's an expense startup, business startup, same thing. Not doing your research to determine, is there a demand? They think, well, everybody loves donuts. I'm going to just set up a donut shop here. And of course, most people love donuts. If there's a Krispy Kreme and a Dunkin' right down the street, then maybe the demand for what you're bringing is not, you know, as significant. And a lot of people simply just don't do their research or don't understand what the actual demand of the market is and how they're fulfilling that or not.
Is there ever been anything, and again, this probably plays into my age. I'm going to turn 58 here in a couple of weeks, and I hate when I start bringing up stuff that makes me sound like an old man, but I do not understand. We are so into convenience in this country. Yeah. Everything's got to be convenient. I'm like, how damn convenient do you need to make it? And it usually affects me in a way that I need a parking spot and I can't because it's for a shipped driver. Or I was at Zaxby's last night and I had to wait an extra 10 minutes because there was a to-go order, because they had someone from DoorDash coming to pick up this monster order.
And that's a whole nother market is the DoorDash. And I sat there.
I don't get it. Am I missing something here? I mean, if you want to cater or something from Chick-fil-A or something, I get that if you're going to get a monster meal, but my son does it all the time. And I'm like, doesn't it cost you money to pay Uber or cause you know, you can Uber Eats, right? Doesn't it cost? So you would go out and Uber like a Big Mac? And he's like, yeah. And I was like, that just makes no sense to me at all that you would, if you're going out to get an $85 or $60 or $90 meal, I think I kind of got it. You want to go to Olive Garden and you just don't feel like getting out and it's rainy, it's nasty, and you want them to deliver it it may be worth the extra 10, 12 bucks. But for like Taco Bell, what am I missing here?
So there's two key things about the American culture that I believe is pushing this. One is that we are I want it and I want it now. You can see people, new iPhone comes out. They've got the previous iPhone model, but they will sleep on a sidewalk in the cold around the corner so they can be have the newest or latest of whatever technology is out there. We want it. We want it now. That's why America has more debt now than they've ever had in their life, for that very reason. Not because of necessity, but because of things that we want. And now we have the ability to defer the pain of payment and get it now. It's instant gratification. And I am absolutely no better in some regards, because everybody I know orders from Amazon. I sit down all the time and I'm like, you know what? I need so-and-so. And I get to looking at, I can order three or four things very quickly. Things that I may not necessarily need, but hey, they're going to bring it right to my door. Now, would I go out to a store? Probably about half the things I buy, I would go out to a store and buy.
Mm-hmm.
But just this weekend, usually on the weekend, when it's just me and my wife, we don't do a lot of cooking. So we'll order a pizza and kind of get us through a few meals and kind of snack on that. And so I ordered two large single toppings, a side of breadsticks. So it was like $25. Well, by the time you do the tax, then because it was delivery, now it's about 4 miles from my house.
Okay.
So it would have taken me, 15 minutes to drive there, pick it up and come back.
Yeah.
But instead, there's a a $6 delivery charge that has nothing to do with the tip. Plus, I try to tip the drivers pretty well. So it was like, so then that got my tip up to about $9 or something like that. So my bill ended up, so it was 23 plus tax, then the delivery fee. Oh, wait a minute, I had a couple. Anyway, bottom line is I ended up paying probably $20 more because I had it delivered than if I'd have gotten up off my lazy ass and driven over there to the Pizza Hut. And I was just like, hey, that's the price I'm willing to pay. And it's, I don't even think about it anymore. It's just, they can bring it to you. They can deliver our packages. Oh, I can have this in 2 days. If I wanted, I can charge this. I can do this. And it's so ingrained that markets are being created out of the convenience, like DoorDash. I mean, sure, there's a need sometimes to have things, but we've always had like our cleaning delivered to our house. Some of the old timey things.
Milk.
Drug stores would oftentimes deliver your medication to your house so you wouldn't have to get out. But now you can have anything. You can have food. You can send them to a store and have a shopper go get different stuff for you and just come. And if you've got the money, because we are living in such a time where we're just really blessed overall financially, in that, we've just decided that's the cost of living. We just throw those kind of things in there.
I can't afford it. I mean, I'm sorry. I just can't.
I know it's crazy.
I keep hearing people how tight it is and how we're all broke and we got inflation and this, that, and the other. And I'm like, and then we're spending $6 to go get a $3 meal. I'm like, it doesn't make sense to me.
I don't know if I've ever shared this with you. My cousin who ran a credit union in Huntsville told me one time that they made $1 million a month on overdraft fees. And I said, that seems impossible to me. I had no perspective. And she said, it's because people will go through a line and swipe their card for a number one at McDonald's and knowing that it's going to be a $30 charge of overdraft. But they want that Big Mac and they'll swipe it and pay the $30.
Wow.
Now that was 15 years ago. She told me that.
That's crazy.
So, it's even worse.
Yeah.
Now.
And I'm not, I'm a business guy, but I quite frankly, I don't understand.
It's crazy.
I don't understand how Amazon makes their money. The whole idea of sitting down and saying, listen, we're going to start delivering Q-tips. You want Q-tips? You can order one bag of Q-tips and I can have them at your house in an hour. And I'm thinking to myself, how is that a moneymaker? Who's doing this? First of all, what are you spending in order to get this Q-tips in an hour? And how can the business that's actually making that delivery with gas and everything, how can they actually, it just blows my mind. Yeah. And I realize it works with other things. And I realize you're not going to drive all the way across town for just Q-tips. But you know, Tony Robbins is the motivational speaker.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm on television the other night and he's like, if you took yourself and you're talking about cell phones, he said, we've got iPhone 15 now, which means we've had 15 different iPhones. And every time an iPhone comes out, it's $1,000. Well, we don't think it's $1,000 because it's going into our bill. We're paying $30-something a month, right?
That's right. Yeah.
If you had taken $1,000 each time a new phone came out and just invested it in Apple stock, you'd have over $200,000 instead of you want that iPhone 15. If you just taken a 15 grand that you spent on phones that you don't know kids are like, it's a free upgrade. And I said, it's not a free upgrade. It just means they're allowing me to finance it into my new loan. So my bill's going to go from 330 to 360 and you're going to have your iPhone 14, but I'm still paying for it. But it's kind of crazy. It really is. Hey, listen, we don't have a lot of time to get into our next thing. And this has been really, really interesting. I want to talk about politics though, because I do want to jump into it next week on the show. As a business person, and I would think non-for-profits are differently. You've got your conservative and you got your liberal ways of thinking. Is there one particular blue or red way of thinking, say, for the small business owner? Is there one you would want, having no gist or any recognition of what either party is doing? If you're a small business owner, which party would you want to be in the White House in 2024 and why?
Well, I'll speak to this traditionally speaking. Small business owners tend to vote more Republican than they do Democrat. And that's because Republican policies tend to favor, or at least it's believed, generally accepted, that they tend to favor small business, which are less regulation and less taxes. When you're a small business, which I've been, and you're trying to make ends meet, and then the government comes out with a new business occupation tax. Yeah. Well, if you're a big company, no big deal. You're throwing, several thousand more dollars in taxes. But to a small business owner, it can be the difference in being able to hire the other person that you need, or, making a go of it. And there's plenty of stories of people saying it just became too much to meet the obligations of keeping my facilities upgraded, to keep OSHA compliant, to stay, there's just all those kind of things that happen. And so, again, this is not a comment as to whether I agree or whether I think it's good or bad. I don't think all regulations are bad. I think you can be overregulated. I do think there's the right balance, but Republicans historically have been against too much regulation, keeping lower taxes and lifting the burden off of small business owners, probably more proactively than Democrats have. And so I would say you tend to see more vote that way.
Coming up next week on Mission Mind, keep in mind your mission, your mind on TKR. You get to hear the show at least 5 days a week. And of course, wherever you get your favorite podcast, we're available everywhere. And right here on our YouTube channel, the Tony Curry YouTube channel. Let's get into politics next week. This should be fun because I get the hashtag Republicans, hashtag Democrats, hashtag Biden, hashtag Trump. That's just me hashtagging all over the place. That should be enough to fire some people up around here. And it's hard to believe it. We're getting pretty close to number three, Joe and Donald number three. So it should be.
Hey, let me end this by saying, did you see John Stewart come back on?
Oh, yeah.
Back on Monday night, and he said this is the oldest one since the one 4 years ago. Record for 4 years ago.
He's great.
Who would have believed that it's these two again? So watch out.
Really is. It's kind of crazy, isn't it?
Yeah.
And I guess, could you have a before? Could they run again in 2028? Joe, could I?
No. Whoever gets it this time, it will be their second term. Yeah. So they can't run again. But the other one could, in theory.
Well, then maybe they'll both be dead by then. We won't have to worry about
Yeah, I don't know.
Thank you, brother. I appreciate you. Don't forget, we have another show called Bite by Bites coming up next here on TKR and wherever you get your favorite podcast.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.